Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, sports fans. It is Sunday, August 17th, 2014. Now that half the preseason is in the books, it really is starting to feel like it's football season. That's right, we are back in the saddle again. Thank you, Steven Tyler. How's everyone doing? Welcome to a new episode of Beyond the Bench. I am your host, Ryan Stern. You can find me on Twitter at rstern33bsp. That BSP is for Back Sports Page, the wonderful producers of our show. Everyone check them out at backsportspage.com. Follow them on Twitter at BackSportsPage or go to Facebook.com/BackSportsPage. You can find the show, Beyond the Bench, on Twitter at Beyond the Bench, or you can go to Facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. Give us a like over there. We will be continuing our NFL divisional previews. We will get into the NFC West, which will wrap up our NFC previews. And then we will jump into the AFC. We'll get into the AFC East for all of you Jet fans out there, as we are located in the tri-state area. But we will break down each and every team from the NFC West, AFC East. We will be giving you a fantasy spin on this as usual, and we will be joined by a great friend of the program, John Laub of FootballDiehards.com. He'll be joining us in about a half hour or so to get his take on the fantasy relevances of the NFC West and AFC East. There is one division of those two that seems to be more jam-packed with fantasy relevant players, and I'm pretty sure you can guess which one we are talking about. That one we are talking about is the NFC West. Yes, we will break down the NFC West starting right now. The Seattle Seahawks. We will open up with the Super Bowl champions. It's pretty tough to not like what the Seattle Seahawks have coming into this season. In a league that is really geared towards passing in many, many places around the NFL, the Seattle Seahawks have a way of shutting that down. And that secondary, the Legion of Boom, is as dominant a secondary as you really have seen in quite some time. And the thing about the Seahawks secondary is that they know. They know that they're good, and they use that, and they don't come out with, sometimes it can come off as cockiness. And yeah, sure, maybe it is a little cocky. But most of it is confidence. When you have someone who, in my belief, Richard Sherman is the number one cornerback in the game. And I know that there was another cornerback in the division, which we'll get into in a few minutes, that signed a contract for a few dollars more than what Richard Sherman is making. But Richard Sherman is as good as it comes. And then you look at the other side, and this is where maybe it's not as strong as it has been in years past, because last year they come in with Brandon Browner. Brandon Browner is now with the New England Patriots. They had one of the top nickel cornerbacks in Walter Thurman. Walter Thurman's now with the Giants. But the emergence of Byron Maxwell towards the end of the year last year gave them the affordability to not have to overpay to keep someone like Browner, who is a secondary member of that secondary, and Walter Thurman. They did bring in Jeremy Lane. I like him as a nickel cornerback. But you don't see this team. I really don't see this team coming out of their base 4-3 in many instances, even in three receiver sets. I do see in four receiver sets, they're definitely going to have to make some adjustments. But the presence of those two safeties, in Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, really gives them the ability to go in with the mindset of, we're going to play 4-3, you're going to have to stop our pass rush, and we have linebackers who can cover as well. Then Michael Bennett, who came off one of it was definitely his best season in the NFL. And Cliff Avril manning the defensive ends. Tony McDaniel, Brandon Mebane. They did lose Red Bryant. They did lose Chris Clemens. So some of their rotation is going to be a little different, because they did run a rotation. Everyone was able to stay fresh because they had 6 to 8 members of the defensive line that they were comfortable putting in any situation. The one move that not many people are talking about is the fact that they brought in Kevin Williams. Kevin Williams, who spent the first 12 years of his career with the Minnesota Vikings, alongside his brother Pat for many of those years. Yes, Kevin Williams isn't the same player he used to be. But now, there are so many other pieces that are going to be around Kevin Williams that he's not going to be asked to be the anchor of a defense anymore. And something like that may be where Kevin Williams is going to be able to shine, even though he's already in his mid-30s. You look at those three linebackers, and we're not even talking about a guy who was the Super Bowl MVP. He's not a starting linebacker when everyone's healthy. Because Bruce Irvin's going to play on the weak side. He's going to play that blind side, the left outside linebacker. Bobby Wagner in the middle. Bobby Wagner is as solid as it comes as a middle linebacker. He's always in the right place. He very rarely misses tackles. And then you also have someone like a K.J. Wright. So you're not even talking about Malcolm Smith, the guy who was one of the key players in the NFC Championship game, and then the Super Bowl MVP. That guy isn't even breaking into the starting lineup. That's how solid and how deep the Seattle Seahawks defense is. And it, especially when you get them at home and you get them in front of that loud crowd, that just makes it even more difficult to try and it's funny because I had been wondering for quite some time whether or not the play of their defense was aided by the crowd noise more than what would really be led on. But then you look at what they did on the road in the Super Bowl. Now, I know there were a ton of Seahawks fans that came in for the Super Bowl, but it wasn't the 80,000 that filled CenturyLink Field. This is a legit defense. And while I will not own the Seahawks defense in any of my fantasy leagues because they're going way too early for my thoughts on taking a defense. I've seen them go anywhere from the 6th to 9th round. I won't take a defense before the 11th round. I want to get my 10 core guys. And then if I see a good value at defense, then I'll take. The Seahawks defense in fantasy isn't coming off the board after the 10th round. This is a defense that's going to get sacks. It's a defense that isn't going to give up a lot of points, and it's a defense that's going to cause turnovers. So, yeah, they're as solid as it comes when you're talking about a fantasy option at defense. That's what you're looking for. I'm just not going to do that. I'd rather stack up in other places. Turning to the offensive side of the board of their ball, the biggest question mark for me is going to be the running back. What's going on with the running backs? Is Marshawn Lynch really at the end of his road with the Seahawks? Because it certainly seems that way. He had that mini holdout in the beginning of camp, and the Seahawks just didn't budge. They didn't care. And this is the last year of Marshawn Lynch's contract. And again, this is another one. I'm probably not going to be owning Marshawn Lynch in many of my fantasy football leagues, only because he's coming off in the first round. I'm not willing to make a risk on a first-round draft pick that they may be looking to get some other people, like a Robert Turbin, like a Christian Michael, more involved in the game so that they're ready to take over the job next year. It also could be that they know that this is going to be the last year that Marshawn Lynch is going to be a part of that team. So why not get every little piece of him that you can get? Maybe they run him into the ground. It's something that there's too much question mark for me to take Marshawn Lynch in the first round. If he falls to me mid-second round and I'm Even, well, and second round, because normally if I'm picking in the back half of the first round, I'm looking to go either tight end, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, because that's where the value is at the back half of the first round. But if I'm picking early and say I'm in the top four, and I do get one of the top four running backs, why wouldn't I want to pair him up with a Marshawn Lynch? Because then you're looking at two legit options. So that's the only way, and I really haven't seen it happen very often, where Marshawn Lynch falls to the end of the second round. So most likely I'm not going to be owning Marshawn Lynch in many of my leagues, also because I'm an upside guy. I prefer taking guys who have the opportunity to outperform their draft spot. And I'm just not sure that if in the first two rounds I take Marshawn Lynch, he's going to outperform the expectations of that pick. Russell Wilson is going to be just fine. You don't have to worry about him. The other issues that the Seahawks have is wide receivers. Now, they have decent depth, but the only guy who they have that you would consider to be a true legit playmaker is Percy Harvin, and who knows if you're going to get a full year out of him. It's just something that, and again, it's another one. I don't know how many Seahawks receivers I'm going to own unless Doug Baldwin falls. If Doug Baldwin, I know early on in draft season, he was falling way late, starting to see his ADP creep up a little bit. If Doug Baldwin falls where I'm going to get him as my wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, I'm perfectly fine with that because I think he has the ability to have a real breakout season. But there are just so many there are a bunch of mouths to feed. We have Harvin, you have Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse. They bring in, they draft Paul Richardson. They have Zach Miller as the tight end. Their running backs are good receivers, and they run the ball a ton. So I wouldn't put myself into having to trust a pass catcher for the Seahawks as one of my starting players. But in reality, when you're talking about if the Seahawks are going to be able to win the division with this group of wide receivers, absolutely. Absolutely. This is a much better reality offense than it is a fantasy offense. On to my prediction, yeah, I think that the Seahawks will win the division. I can see them at a 12-4, 13-3. I think they may be a little volatile when it comes to some of their road games, and they play in a hell of a division. And one of the reasons why they have a hell of a division is the San Francisco 49ers. And here's where I'm going to surprise some people. And I may have said it in the past, I may have said it on other shows on the Back Sports page. Wonderful programming that we offer. Everyone, make sure you go to iTunes, or your podcast app, search for Back Sports Page. You've got a wonderful lineup of shows, including Real Sports Talk Radio, Randy Zellia, Mike Tramontazzi, Talking Sports, Seth and Sean. We have our own fantasy show coming back for its second season, Monday Morning Hangover. We got Under the Hoodies, From the Touchline. Anything that you could be looking for, we have. We're bringing it to you. But with the 49ers, I'm not so sure. I believe that they can be a playoff team this year. I think they take a step back. Now, do I think that they will have a better offense this year than in years past? Absolutely. I think this can be one of their better offensive seasons of any of the past number of years. I think Kaepernick is a dynamic player. He has a cannon of an arm. It's all about decision-making with it sometimes. And he can beat you with his feet. He's got an extra weapon to play with. They trade for Stevie Johnson of the Buffalo Bills. He's now your slot guy. And Stevie Johnson is a hell of a guy to have playing in your slot. On the outside, you got Crabtree. If Crabtree stays healthy for a full season, then that can be a real good hookup with Kaepernick and Crabtree, because they do seem to have a good chemistry with each other. But Anquan Boldin's another year older. And I'm not sure that he can put up, although he won't be asked to, but I don't think he puts up anywhere close to the numbers that he put up last year. Then you have a bunch of just guys. They bring in Brandon Lloyd, and they're raving about what Brandon Lloyd's been doing in preseason. I don't buy it. I don't think Brandon Lloyd is... If Brandon Lloyd was as good as he's looked this year, why did no team sign him last year? I just don't see it. Their running back situation. And Frank Gore is the running back version of Reggie Wayne to me. I keep saying every year, this is the year that Frank Gore just falls off. Frank Gore is done. And he just seems to keep putting up solid numbers. But he's now on the wrong side of 30. And they did spend a high draft pick on a kid who looks pretty good. Carlos Hyde out of Ohio State. If it weren't for the loyalty that the San Francisco 49ers show to their players, especially a guy like a Frank Gore, if it weren't for that loyalty, Carlos Hyde would be the starting running back on the 49ers this year. Just because I think that as of right now, and again, just like how Reggie Wayne always proves me wrong, Frank Gore always proves me wrong. But as of right now, Carlos Hyde is the better running back. And if there's any guy that I want to handcuff, it may be Frank Gore. Even though you're not spending a very high pick on a Frank Gore, I just think that if you own him, you want to make sure that you get Carlos Hyde. Because Carlos Hyde is going to be the next big running back in the league. And even though Bishop Sankey has a clearer path to getting more reps, to having a more defined role as a starter, I think that I even think that Carlos Hyde may end up with more points this year than Bishop Sankey, because if Frank Gore goes down, Carlos Hyde is going to be a top 12 play most weeks. That's how I see him. And those of you that know, I'm not an Ohio State guy. I do not, as a Notre Dame fan, I root against Ohio State. But I do think that Carlos Hyde is set to be the next big star of running backs in the NFL. You also have a guy like a Terrence West, who's going to be backing up Ben Tate, another guy who can't stay healthy. So Terrence West, and we'll get into the AFC, the rest of the AFC at a later time. Carlos Hyde, name, if you can reach a round or two early, if you feel that you're comfortable enough, it's something I think should be done. Especially in keeper league. But the going back to the 49ers, the real issue that I have with this team is going to be their defense. Yeah, I said it, their defense. Justin Smith is at the end of his career. I don't see him, even though he's been very solid throughout, I don't see him having any real major impact this year. Glenn Dorsey is out for probably the entire year with a torn bicep. So they're worrying about Tank Carradine coming back from injury and having to play a prominent role. I don't like what the 49ers have. I know of the 3-4, you're not expecting a lot of the crazy production, because most of the production in the 3-4 comes from your linebackers. I don't like what they have up front. And then you move into the linebackers. Who knows what Alden Smith is going to bring you? Yes, Alden Smith is a dynamic pass rusher, above average at stopping the run. Who knows if you're going to be able to keep him on the field? This guy just, trouble seems to find him. And that worries me if I'm a 49er fan, because it just seems that it could be any moment that you're looking at a 4, 6, 8 game suspension for Alden Smith. Other linebackers, Patrick Willis did not look as dynamic, and I know he was battling injuries last year, but now he's starting to get up there in age. He's almost 30, and even though he's been one of the top linebackers, if not the top linebacker in all of football for quite some time, he wasn't that last year. And I don't know if part of the reason was the guy who was playing next to him, which was Navarro Bowman. Navarro Bowman is out for half the year, at least, coming off that gruesome knee injury. And I just don't see the 49ers, who have been, they've prided themselves on defensive play. Then you look at their secondary, where they lost almost everybody. Don't see this being one of the most fearsome defensive teams in the game.
We're going to take a little bit of a break from our divisional preview as it comes to reality, and now we're going to step into the world of fantasy. We're going to welcome in friend of the program from footballdiehards.com, John Laub. How are you this morning, John?
I'm doing great, man. It's pigskin time.
Absolutely. We were stepping into the NFC West with our divisional previews this morning, and one of the points that I brought up is there aren't going to be too many Seattle Seahawks of their offensive players and even their defense that I'm probably going to own, because I think that Marshawn Lynch is going a little bit higher than I feel comfortable taking him, because I do think he has a step back this year. And I think there are too many pass catchers for a team that is a run-first defense for me to really feel safe about owning any of them as a real contributor to my team.
Yes, I tend to agree with you. There's actually only one Seahawk who I'm targeting right now, and that is Russell Wilson. I'm not necessarily targeting him as my starter. I personally think he's about the 10th to 12th best fantasy quarterback, which in a 12-team league will put him as a starter. However, most people out there are not drafting Russell Wilson as a starter. So I've been able to grab Russell Wilson in round 10, 11, and one time I even grabbed him in round number 12. So far, I've gotten one team with Peyton Manning in a two-quarterback league, Peyton Manning with my starter, Russell Wilson as my backup, and Ryan Tannehill as my third. In another team, I ended up with Matt Ryan as my starter and Russell Wilson as my backup in a two-quarterback, in a one-quarterback league. So I love Wilson. I watched that game the entire first half. He was absolutely amazing. I'm also a big believer in a young quarterback who wins a Super Bowl. You look at what Tom Brady did the next year after he won that first Super Bowl with the Rams. His numbers escalated as a fantasy player. Eli Manning, after winning the Super Bowl in 2007, became a very good top 10 fantasy quarterback in 2008. The psychological and confidence that a quarterback gets from winning that Super Bowl is unbelievable. And the teammates just rally around these young guys, and that is Russell Wilson. I am amazed at how no one is interested in this player. He is a very smart runner. I liken him to a Steve Young in his prime. He's not going to get 750 yards. He's not going to put his body at risk. Russell Wilson is going to be very intelligent, gain between 400 and 500 yards rushing. He is a scrambler who looks to throw. And what he does by doing that, he finds the open man downfield. They don't have great receivers. I do think Percy Harvin can be dynamic, but we'll get to him in a second. But by scrambling and looking downfield, Wilson finds the open man. He makes plays. He's also probably going to run for 5 to 7 touchdowns on the ground. I love Russell Wilson. I can't believe people are overlooking this guy. Now, the only other guy I'm interested in is Percy Harvin. However, I think he is going too high. I'm not going to take the risk. He has not proven to me that he can stay on the field for 16 games. Now, when he is on the field and he is healthy, there are very few players who can do what Percy Harvin does. But I would prefer to get him in the 7th round, but he's not lasting that long from any drafts that I see. Obviously, by round 7, 8, I'm taking Percy Harvin off the board. But what I see is him going in the 5th round or sometimes even the 4th, and I'm not willing to take the risk at that point. And on your final note, I completely agree with Marshawn Lynch. I love the man. He is a fantastic player to watch. I have enjoyed him on Sunday afternoons. However, those numbers of carries, every warning sign is there. The man is a powerful runner. He has punished opponents, but in doing so, he has punished his body. They have also fed him the football, and he is taking every carry and every catch that the Seahawks have asked for him of the last 2 years. He has performed in the postseason. Those running backs who have done what Marshawn Lynch has done in the past 3 years, they have a drop-off in production. Just look at Ray Rice from last year. Look at these guys who carry the ball that much. The legs go out on them. I am not grabbing Marshawn Lynch in any league.
I absolutely agree. I just want to get back to Percy Harvin for 1 second. If Percy Harvin plays all 16 games, he's going to outperform his ADP. I think it's safe to say. But it's just something that I'm not willing to take a risk unless it's in my flex spot. I won't take him anywhere other than a flex because I want to be given the opportunity to sub him in or out in any given week. I don't want to have to rely on him to stay healthy every single week.
I completely agree with you.
And it's funny, a lot of people normally don't talk defenses when you listen to either fantasy, radio shows, podcasts, anything like that. But the Seahawks defense, and as good as they're going to be, I'm just not going to own them because I know that they're the safest pick to be the top defense in the entire NFL. I'm just not going to waste a 6th to 8th round pick, which I've seen them go in most leagues, on a defense.
Ryan, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, when I did my rankings, I had to put Seattle at number one. They had just been so dominant. But I would not draft them. They are going way too early. They are a Super Bowl champion with a tremendously difficult schedule this year. They are nasty at home. If you have them in a like salary cap league or a weekly league, I would love to play them all week, 8 weeks at home, especially against some weaker opponents. However, on the road, I have my questions about them. And in a fantasy, in a season-long team, I'm not willing to invest that type of draft pick on a defense. I'm very comfortable with getting the St. Louis Rams or the Arizona Cardinals, since we're in the division, which is ironic. I'm very willing and confident in drafting a defense like them later in the draft and rolling with them, who also have just as dynamic players, however they are under the radar, and they are a little bit younger. But I think they have guys who can return it on special teams. I think Tavon Austin and now John Brown can score you points on the kick and punt return, and their defense can create turnovers and bring it to the house just as easily as the Seahawks and come at a much better price.
That's funny because there are two defenses that I'm really starting to see pretty much fill out my teams, and you mentioned one of them with the Rams. I think that they're the sleeper, maybe even team, of the entire NFL, and also the Cincinnati Bengals. I think the Bengals can have maybe the best defense in the entire NFL, but especially over in that AFC.
I do like the Bengals, but I love the Rams. I have the Rams ranked number 2 at defense. I think their front four is nasty. It is mean. They are going to blitz between Greg Williams and Jeff Fisher. You have a defense that is high risk, high reward, which I love as a fantasy owner. They are going to hit the quarterback. They are going to bring pressure. They are going to disrupt young quarterbacks. Now, they will give up some plays because their secondary is not the best in football. But I will take that risk reward with the Rams. When they are against a young quarterback or a quarterback who doesn't like to deal with pressure, the Rams are going to be extraordinarily disruptive. Fisher was unbelievable with the Titans. Some when he had Javon Curse. Oh, who was the guy? Oh, he was so good in the 90s. Why is it? I'm blanking out now. But he can make guys on
You're right. Javon Curse.
Oh, okay. And then when Greg Williams, remember the Saints when they won the Super Bowl? Greg Williams, that was a good defense. Fantasy-wise, the year the Saints won the Super Bowl. And now I got Fisher and Williams, and I've got young talent all over that defensive line. I'm loving me that Rams this year, and they're coming at a much better price than the Seahawks. And I do like the Bengals. The Bengals are underrated. Marvin Lewis is a very, very good defensive coordinator. That Bengals front seven is disruptive. He has more talent in the secondary. I agree with you. I like the Bengals, but people seem to be drafting the Bengals. I can't get them on my team because I think other owners are onto them, but the Rams and the Cardinals I've pretty much been able to get on my team.
I want to step into the San Francisco 49ers real quickly. I likened thinking of Frank Gore the same way that I think of Reggie Wayne. The past couple years, I've gone into each of the seasons saying, all right, well, this is the year that Reggie Wayne's going to fall off. This is the year Frank Gore is going to fall off. And they keep proving me wrong. Do you think that this is the year that Frank Gore falls off?
You know, Ryan, we are twins separated at birth because I've done the same thing with Frank. I've done the same thing with Frank Gore. I have never drafted him in the last three seasons. I cannot discount how good he is playing football. And I've even taken him in weekly contests where I believe the matchup is beneficial to me. But I was never comfortable drafting him over a 14-game fantasy season and counting on him in the playoffs because I thought the drop-off was there. And once again, here I am. I'm not drafting Frank Gore anywhere. And once again, I could be completely wrong. I've been wrong in the past. I don't feel bad because I always kind of, when I have a solid reason for doing something and making a decision and it is wrong, I don't feel like I made the wrong decision. Just the player or the athlete proved me wrong, and that's okay. But I have not gotten him on any team. I don't even think I have him. If I look in my rankings, I might not even have him in the top 15 right now. I am not interested in Frank Gore. I am more interested in Carlos Hyde, but other people seem to be taking Carlos Hyde also. You know what, right? In the Die Hard magazine, I don't even have Frank Gore. I don't even have him in my top 20. That's how I just have no interest in Frank Gore at all. I think he has proven me completely wrong. The two surgeries on his knees, he has just been a dominant back. But I think the cliff has got to be coming, and I hope he proves me wrong for his own career, but I'm not taking him as a fantasy owner, and I'm not interested in him on my team.
You brought up Carlos Hyde. Do you view Carlos Hyde strictly as a handcuff, or do you see him having value this year?
Aha. If I have Frank Gore in a keeper, I'm probably going to keep him and handcuff him with Hyde. Mostly I see him as a handcuff early. I do not think Jim Harbaugh is going to go away from Frank Gore. Veteran coaches who have had success, and especially gotten to three NFC championship games and the Super Bowl, I doubt he's going to give the reins to Carlos Hyde the first month of the season. He is going to stick with Frank Gore in the beginning. You have confidence in the blitz pickup. You have confidence that he works well with Colin Kaepernick in kind of this sophisticated run game that they run in Atlanta, in San Francisco. He's going to stay with him. But if the production is not there, Harbaugh also wants to win more than anything. Carlos Hyde will sneak in and start to get more carries. If you draft Carlos Hyde without Gore, you've got to be patient. And sometimes fantasy owners are very impatient. They cannot wait. I could see Carlos Hyde getting a minimal amount of carries the first 3 weeks of the season and a fantasy owner cutting him. I am going to swoop in like a vulture with a dead carcass. I'm going to grab Carlos Hyde, and I'm going to take him because I do believe by the end of the season, Carlos Hyde will be the more productive back in San Francisco. But I think you must be patient with him. And we all know that fantasy owners are not patient.
Over to the Cardinals. And when he came out, and it was the same year that Justin Blackmon came out too, and this may have been the Notre Dame fan in me, but I said that Michael Floyd was going to be the best wide receiver out of that draft class. And you really started to see Michael Floyd start to break out last year. He's on my list of guys that I want on my team this year. How do you feel about Michael Floyd?
I'm so glad you brought him up. So let me backtrack a little bit. I am the biggest Bruce Arians fan in the world. I just have a man crush on this guy. I love the fact that he worked hard to get his job. He was never given anything. I think Bruce Arians is a lot smarter than people give him credit for. I think he's a borderline offensive genius, and I think he's a coach's coach. He coaches technique and strategy as well as he does anything else. I think he loves young players. I love his philosophy. I love how he motivates people differently. I'm an educator by trade, and you can't educate every child the same. And when I listen to Bruce Arians, he scolds Jonathan Cooper, who is a tough Alabama lineman. And at the same time, he praises a kid like John Brown and Andre Ellington. He understands the psychological component of motivation and coaching, and I love that. And I'm sure he's tough on Fitzgerald because he knows Fitzgerald can do it. And I love that. I hate coaches who motivate everyone the same way. When you listen to Arians, he has different comments about all different players, and I like that, and I see the educator in him. And ultimately, coaching is about educating and motivating. So on that note, I do like Michael Floyd very much. However, I see the cost of Floyd as being a little inflated at this point. I'm scoffing up Fitzgerald on every team. I love Fitzgerald this year. He is going to play every position in Arians' offense. I still believe the first read for Carson Palmer in Arians' offense, the first read is still going to be predominantly Larry Fitzgerald. He's going to move Fitzgerald around on this offense. I am loving me, Larry Fitzgerald. I agree with you, Floyd has unbelievable talent, and all fantasy owners are intrigued by him. However, I think the value right now and the risk-reward, I'm going to lower my risk because I like to take risk-reward players, but I don't take them all over the map. The guy that I love is Fitzgerald. Now, I think Fitzgerald benefits by having Michael Floyd on this football team. I also love John Brown. I think this speedster with Brown and Ellington as the young studs who are going to have to be paid attention to will open up the field for Fitzgerald and Floyd. Or if you leave these speedsters one-on-one, Arians is such a great coach. He's going to get Ellington and John Brown in one read, miss one tackle, catch and go. And they are going to be disruptive. But right now I am going after Fitzgerald at a little better price, lowering my risk-to-reward ratio because I feel very confident in 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns for Fitzgerald. Now, I do agree with you that Floyd is going to take a bounce up in production. I tend to look at Floyd right now as 1,100 yards and 9 or 10 touchdowns. But I don't know why everyone's overlooking Fitzgerald, so I'm gobbling up Fitzgerald in the 4th and 5th rounds of drafts, and I'm loving me Larry Fitzgerald this year.
you did mention a couple times Andre Ellington, and Bruce Arians hasn't really hid from the fact that he has gone out and said that the offense is pretty much going to go through Andre Ellington. Now, Ellington isn't the prototypical size of your normal bell cow running back. Look, this is Andre Ellington. I've seen him fall into the fourth round, and anytime I can get him in the fourth round, there's no way he's getting past me. But do you
I've taken him in the third round of my last two drafts as a flex position running back or as a starting running back. I think that Andre Ellington is special. Now, I play college fantasy football, and I try not to have cognitive bias, but I watched Andre Ellington a lot at Clemson. He was a tremendous playmaker. When he is in space and he played with Watkins and DeAndre Hopkins and Tajae Bell and Dwayne Allen, and when Andre Ellington was in space at Clemson, he was a dynamic back. Now, I agree with you. You cannot give Andre Ellington the football 25 times a game on the ground. But I do believe that you can give Andre Ellington 15 to 17 carries, get him out on the corner. He is tough enough between the tackles. But you can also get him 5 or 6 receptions a game. I think Stephen Taylor may be the closer, that in the fourth quarter, if they have a 10 or 14 point lead, they will put Stephen Taylor in the backfield to get those tough, time-killing, yardage-gaining carries. 3-4 yards a pop, take the big hits, but Ellington will put the game out of reach. I mean, I think about Bruce Arians. If I line up John Brown and Michael Floyd wide left, I put Larry Fitzgerald out wide on the right, I run these three guys on deep posts, I flood those safeties and corners, and I put Ellington out in the flat on the left, I give him the football, boom, he shakes a defender, I got Floyd can block, he comes from Notre Dame. John Brown is running deep. He will scare safeties. I got Andre Ellington in the edge in space. I got a 40-yard gain right there. That's where I think you're going to get the production out of Ellington. 5 catches, 60 yards, and hopefully a touch. 15 carries, 65, 70 yards on the ground. Maybe he pops one and you get 100. There is no way I'm letting Ellington go past the fourth round. Couldn't agree with you more.
There's one other team I want to get to you from the NFC West, and that is the St. Louis Rams. And for me, it's really tough to justify owning any real any of the St. Louis Rams and expecting them to outperform their ADPs, except for maybe a Zach Stacy. How do you feel about this St. Louis Rams offense coming into the season?
You sure you don't have any DNA that I have? Because I agree with you completely. The only guy I'm drafting right now is Zach Stacy on the offensive side of the football. Obviously, in a non-PPR, Stacy has even more value. And I was actually on a mock draft army with Howard Bender on Friday night, and I took Stacy in an non-PPR in the second round. Now, I'm also comfortable with Zach Stacy in a PPR. I do think in a Jeff Fisher offense, he is going to give his bell cow runner 25 carries a game. That's Jeff Fisher's MO. He also wants to protect that Greg Williams defense. He wants to keep that defense on the sideline, win the time of possession, and unleash that front seven on the offensive, against the offensive linemen. And the way you're going to do that is you're going to run the ball with Zach Stacy. Now, I'm not as afraid of Trey Mason this year. I think Mason has some limitations, and I had him ranked 3rd in my pre-draft prospects at running back. Loved him at Auburn. I think he can be a special player. However, that Auburn running game was not an NFL-style passing game. and I think his limitations in the passing offense is going to keep him off the field for a little while, especially in pass production. So I do like Zach Stacy a lot. I cannot go after any of the wide receivers. None of them have shown me that they can be a productive NFL wideout at this time, especially fantasy-wise. What I think will happen over the course of the season, you will have different guys pop up different weeks. Schottenheimer, I'm not in love with the guy. I don't really understand how he keeps getting jobs. I'm not convinced that he understands how to keep this offense simple, where I, while paradoxically making it complicated for the defense. I sit, and I know that sounds strange, but I think great coaches like Arians have that ability. I do not think Schottenheimer does that. I think Schottenheimer is in love with his verbiage. He's in love with his complexity, and he doesn't now know how to coach up young kids, and I think they have hard times with him. I think so. Because of that, I think his receivers are having a hard time. It's kind of like Ruben Randall. Keep it simple, baby. You keep it simple and the guy can perform. Use the athletic skills. Don't overwhelm them, especially young kids. I think Schottenheimer overwhelmed some of these young kids at wide receiver. So, therefore, I haven't gotten a Ram wide receiver on my team. Some guys are talking about Kenny Britt. Obviously, I guess if you can get him in round 15, you could take Britt. I haven't seen enough out of Tavon Austin for me to be sold on him. Brian Quick, I'm not convinced he can do it yet at this level on a consistent basis. So I'm not going after any of those guys. And at the same time, the question mark ultimately comes down to Sam Bradford. Now, I liked Sam Bradford the first month of last season. He was really impressing me. I think he had made some leaps. And I thought he was going to end up with about 24 touchdowns last year at the pace that he was going. Of course, there would have been a dip at times, and the young quarterback will have an off game. But the wide receivers are ultimately going to also be tied to the production of the quarterback. And I'm not convinced that Bradford is going to make a tremendous leap this year. I think he'll be good. I do think Bradford has some potential still. And there is no way, I couldn't believe people were calling for a new quarterback in St. Louis. There was no way I was giving up in St. Louis if I was checking the shirt or the management. I've got to give the kid 16 games. Now, if he goes out there and they're a bust, then I might think of going in another direction. But I am not taking Sam Bradford, except for as a third stringer on a two-quarterback lead. I need to see his production. Therefore, the wide receivers, to me, are very limited. And I think Schottenheimer will coach to have a big game from a different player every week.
John, I want to thank you, as always. Your knowledge of everything, not just within fantasy, but of how the game is played and coached, is unparalleled. And I want to thank you again for giving us a few minutes. And we'll definitely talk to you throughout the season.
Excellent, Ryan. Love the show, and it's always my pleasure to come on.
Everyone, make sure you give John a follow on Twitter at GridironSchol91, GridironSchol91. All right, John, we'll talk to you again.
Yep, excellent.
All right, and that was the wonderful John Laub, footballdiehards.com. Everyone, make sure you check out some of his stuff. He does great work on with his previews. If you do play college fantasy football, that's a guy you want to look to. Dude knows what he's talking about. It's plain and simple. It's funny because every time we talk to John, it feels like a 5-minute conversation, but it takes up a good half hour. And I want to thank John for all of his information. Real quickly before we do end the show, let's finish wrapping up the NFC West. The Arizona Cardinals, if they can get decent play out of their front seven, because they're another team that has a real good
secondary. If they can get decent production out of their front seven, this is going to be a playoff team. Because they have the offensive weapons. And, yeah, Carson Palmer's going to throw interceptions. It's what Carson Palmer does. It's what he's done his entire career. But he also makes plays. And I think he's got the most amount of playmakers that he this year that he's ever really had. Between the emerging Michael Floyd, the ever-so-steady veteran in Larry Fitzgerald, the emerging John Brown, Andre Ellington, who is going to be able to also catch passes out of the backfield. So that team is going to be determined by how the front seven plays. If they can stop the run and get a decent pass rush, they're going to be a playoff team. I see them going 11-5 this year. And the final team in the NFC West is your St. Louis Rams. There were enough players I apologize for that technical difficulty. Anyway, back to where I was with the St. Louis Rams. I just don't see them having enough production on the offensive side of the ball to warrant them being a playoff team this year. But they're close. They're real close. And they're not many pieces away. That they may have the right pieces in place. I think they just may be a year or so away. Tavon Austin can be something special. Stedman Bailey can be a pretty good receiver. Who knows what they're going to get out of Kenny Britt? People are saying he looks real good in training camp. I just don't see enough consistent offensive production from this team for me to think that they're going to be a playoff team, even though I love their front seven. And that defensive line, as John brought it up earlier, that defensive line is mean, it's nasty, and it's going to get to the quarterback. And I said the Rams are a defense that I'm finding myself owning in a lot of fantasy leagues. If there's one thing that in this new passing league, just about every team's going to give up points. You can't look for the team that's going to give up the fewest points and has the best opportunities at interceptions as being your go-to defense. You want consistent production, and the way that fantasy defenses get consistent production is sacking the quarterback, causing fumbles. And that's what this defense is going to do. They're going to get to the quarterback. They between Long and Quinn on the outside, Brockers and now Aaron Donald, who may be the best pass-rushing defensive tackle in the NFL right now, maybe behind Geno Atkins and Ndamukong Suh. Maybe they have a rookie who can be the third best pass rusher as a defensive tackle. That front four is outstanding. It is outstanding, and that front four is going to get to the quarterback on a consistent basis and without additional pressure. And you know the additional pressure is going to come because it is Greg Williams' defense. Greg Williams loves to blitz. He's not going to have to blitz two linebackers or a linebacker and a cornerback on a consistent basis because of the production that he's going to get out of that front four. He's still going to do it. He's going to make sure that quarterbacks have to get the ball out early. And if they force quarterbacks into getting the ball out early, maybe you start to see these cornerbacks that they have be a little bit more comfortable in press coverage and getting up in the wide receiver's face at the line of scrimmage and making plays. This season, if the Rams are going to make the playoffs, it's going to be because Sam Bradford finally makes that next step and takes everyone back to his Oklahoma days. That's what the Rams are going to need in order to make the playoffs. I just don't see it happening. We will get into the AFC in the next coming weeks. My final predictions for the NFC West. Give me the Seahawks, 13-3. Give me the Cardinals at 11-5. Give me the 49ers at 10-6. And give me the Rams at 8-8. So I do think every team in the division finishes at least 500. Once again, I want to thank John Loud for a few minutes. Well, for about a half hour. It only felt like a few minutes. Again, make sure you follow John Loud on Twitter at GridironSchol91, GridironSchol91. You can find me on Twitter at rstern33bsp. You can find the show on Twitter at Beyond the Bench. Facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. Thank you, as always, to BackSportsPage.com for producing the show. And until we see you next time, There will be a one-week hiatus. I will be taking my daughter down to Disney. I'm going to try and get on to Real Sports Talk. Maybe we'll get my AFC East preview in this week on that. So make sure you stay tuned. And until I talk to you again, I want you all to have a nice day.